Paula smacked a couple buttons on the digisheet and placed it on the ground so she could split her attention between the tiny holodisplay and the trench around her. The three-dimensional glowing blue display seemed brighter in the thick smoke that clung to the burning planet after the kinetic strikes. Jade quickly reviewed her strategy, while Sashala and Pak listened and glanced at the schematics. Polycrete fortifications here and here are allowing the Harditz to fire with their tails from relative safety, said Jade. The holodisplay flashed, showing the locations. Here, here, and here are the nearest machine gun nests. They cut into these bunkers but limited their scope of fire. These are your primary concern. I have interlaced their fields of fire, and there is a lapse to the far right of these machine gun nests. This route will ensure only the Harditz firing blindly might hit you. Sashala braced against the wall of the trench as one of the proximity grenades she had thrown detonated, tossing a smoking hearted arm near her feet. Leaning over to Pak, she removed one of the grenades from his chest, switched it to proximity, and chucked it to where the last one had blown. The force of Sashala pulling the grenade from Pak's chest caused him to roll to his side and clench his stomach. The coughing fit that followed made Sashala's skin crawl. More blood coated the inside of Pak's broken helmet. Lifting his helmet to look at his face, Sashala could see the skin around his eyes, nose, and mouth looked burned and blotchy. Sashala, he is suffering from serious radiation sickness and will require immediate medical attention to survive, said Jade. You must get inside quickly. The two proximity grenades and the overhead directional explosives detonated at roughly the same time, and hearted meat rained down from the opaque sky. Pulling Pak to his feet, Sashala shouted that they needed to move. Throwing the bodies of a few Hardits against the cut earth wall of the trench, Sashala created a makeshift series of stairs. Pak, flashbangs on three, then we take those machine gun nests. Loop right, and we'll come up behind them. Pak tried to give a thumbs up, but another fit of coughing ruined it for him. 1, 2, 3, said Sashala, as she hurled a flashbang toward the nests. Crunching hearted bodies, she sprinted up the bloody stairs she had created, tapping her assault thrusters as she came to the crest. Visibility was slightly better than before, but Sashala still relied on Jade's targeting. Glancing to her left, she fired three sabots into the chest of the nearest running Hardit, which was clearly blinded by the flashbangs she and Pak had thrown. The haze in the air flashed like a strobe as the three nearest machine gun nests to Sashala's left pivoted their guns and fired. Jade was right. The route they had selected was just outside of their reach. Putting this threat from her mind, Sashala continued her surge upward. She needed to close on the low fortifications with the cowardly Hardits hiding behind them. Hardit weapons seemed to hover in the smoky air in front of her. The monkeys fired randomly from behind the barricade in her and Pak's general direction. The drenching animals didn't bother to look. Instead, they let their tails hold down the triggers as they swept their weapons left and right. A feeling like a fist smashing her side indicated another sabot had found its mark. Jade spoke in her ear as Sashala gulped at the newfound pain. It should be non-fatal. I'm deploying your suit's internal foam to clot the wound and seal the breach. Enough! Sashala bellowed as the combat drugs increased and her rage intensified. Her assault thrusters propelled her tiny frame forward, closing on the drenching Hardit fortification. Grabbing a tail with her non-firing hand as she bounded over the polycrete fortification, Sashala pulled a Hardit onto its back and blasted it point-blank with her SA-71. 10 sabots later, the remaining Hardits dastardly firing at them from behind the low fortification were delivered to their unclean gods for sorting. With her bloodlust increasing, she hauled Ars past the dead Hardits toward the machine gun nests. Pak was climbing over the barricade she had just cleared and was obviously struggling to continue moving. She knew it was up to her to clear the way. The Hardits had built the 4 machine gun nests in a semicircle around the entrance to the sally port, and there appeared to be only a single entrance to the rear. Their mistake was not elevating the firing ports high enough from the ground below. Sashala was about to capitalize on this oversight. Jumping from the polycrete barricade she had cleared and sprinting in front of the machine gun nests, staying close to the polycrete into which they had carved their firing ports, Sashala released her carbine and allowed it to lock to her back. Ducking under smoking barrels, she lobbed a grenade into the rectangular port above and felt the satisfying expansion of air and heat as the occupants were eliminated. The process was repeated 3 times, completely depleting her grenades. After the final grenade concussion, the non-stop chaotic fire from the machine gun nests finally ground to a halt. Knowing another uncleared barricade was waiting for her ahead, Zashala ripped two knives free from her legs and upped her speed. Carbines flashed in the smoke to her far left as Harditz and the hazy soup below, running the trenches, began firing toward their own position, trying to hit the tiny human who was destroying their fortification. The familiar thump of an SA-71 grenade tube sounded behind her, and a backward glance let her see that Pack had entered one of the smoking machine gun nests and was sending grenades into the trenches. Glad he was still alive to assist, Zashala gripped her two knives tighter as the rounded polycrete wall transitioned into barricade. She jumped the waist-high polycrete gracefully, but then Zashala cursed as a Harditz stood up from behind the barricade and ruined her flight. Her body impacted the furry beast and they tumbled to the ground. The larger and stronger Harditz gripped Zashala with its clawed hands and tail and threw her into a wall near the entrance to the Sallyport. The force of her impact against the wall nearly knocked her unconscious, and the severity of the blow caused the biometric display in her reticle to flash. She blinked away the fluttering lights in her eyes. Then she watched the Harditz let out a wild howl, pulled a knife from its waist, and run toward her. Undaunted by the charging Harditz, Zashala ripped her SA-71 free from her back and emptied four rounds into its head and neck. The remaining 10 Harditz all turned their weapons on Zashala. She managed to hit two before her SA-71 clicked, indicating it was out of ammunition. Carbine fire directly to her left nearly caused her to pee. Pack had arrived. He looked like the walking dead, but his purpose appeared clear. Kill Harditz. The reacting Harditz split their fire between Pack and Zashala, with Pack being the main sabo sponge. Zashala screamed as more sabos impacted her body, and Jade increased the flow of pain-killing combat drugs to the point where Zashala felt slightly numb. Chunks of polycrete skittered against her body armor when Pack fired grenade from the tube on his SA-71. Shrapnel from the grenade shredded all but one Harditz, but it also sent bits of burning metal into Pack. Zashala roared her dismay when she watched Pack's abdominal cavity open and spill his guts down his battered combat armor. Pack was gone and replaced by a Reaper, hell-bent on one last kill. The end of his SA-71 glowed bright blue as he activated his assault cutters. The rotating glowing blue monofilament needle spun while Pack stumbled forward, walking through his own intestines and gore. The Harditz he approached cowered at the sight of this seemingly immortal marine. The Harditz squealed as Pack fell onto him. Each of the spinning teeth cut into its flesh, spraying blood and bodily tissue into a mist. The cloud of red hung in the air and mixed with the hot, thick smoke, which seemed to hold it in place, marking where the battle had played out. Slumped forward onto his dead enemy, Pack rolled to his side. Zashala ran to Pack, dropped down beside him and grabbed his gloved hand. "Pack," she whispered. "Zashala, he is dead," said Jade. "Rejoice, knowing his death was a good one, all things considered, and he died rather quickly once he hit the ground. There is no time to mourn. Take his AI to honor him and let's move." Zashala did what Jade said, though the tears wouldn't stop flowing as she moved. She stripped Pack's AI and placed it in the same compartment as Vanderman's. Leaning forward, she solemnly touched her helmet to Pack's and wished him a safe journey into the arms of the ancestors. "Not bad for a modern," she said. "Not bad at all." Her farewell was cut short by the ringing of multiple carbines in the trenches below. The drenting monkeys were rallying, hoping to retake their fortification from her. Moderately safe from the incoming fire behind the barricade, Zashala took an extra moment to grab as much of Pack's munitions as she could, and then she covered him with a tarp from her native kit. Jade rushed her along with an update. "Zashala, there are more Harditz coming than you can possibly deal with. You need to seal the Sallyport entrance behind you and prevent them from chasing you down into the city." After giving one final touch to Pack's tarp-covered chest, Zashala limped for the Sallyport entrance. The polycrete ramp sloped downward, and the tunnel was wide enough to allow a vehicle to drive through. This was one of the many entrances into Beta City. Like most White Knight cities, it existed entirely underground. Knowing that the militia would be on her at any second, she placed every explosive she had where Jade indicated, praying her AI understood the architecture. Zashala felt confident as Jade started the countdown. The polycrete walls of the tunnel were already damaged from the kinetic strike, and she believed this extra explosive oomph would finish the work. Sashala, in her weakened and tired state, didn't consider the pressure wave that would result from such a blast. When Jade triggered the detonation, Sashala, despite being around a bend down the tunnel, was thrown onto her butt as air pushed past her. The entire tunnel shook, and bits of polycrete and dust drifted down from overhead. After getting back to her feet, Sashala came around the bend and viewed the cave-in. Everything was in different shades of green, since Jade had transitioned the helmet reticle to night vision. Success, Jade chimed in her ear. Time to get moving, Marine. You're going to start glowing due to the radiation if we don't get you to a shielded space for icing. Sashala managed a small smile at the idea of glowing, although she was already starting to feel nauseated. She couldn't be sure if that was due to the extreme number of injuries and amount of drugs in her system, or if, like Pack, she was starting to succumb to radiation sickness. She sat down and began patching the holes in her armor. A different voice in her ear stopped her mid-patch. The communication was full of static, but she could make out a few words. Gunshrike, I say again, Phase Gunshrike, this is Human Legion. The comms cut off for a moment, then reestablished. Is your current location, I say again, where? Sashala left for a moment, then she began weeping. Doc had survived somehow, and he had returned for them. Unfortunately, she had gotten Pack killed and trapped herself inside a radioactive city. Clearing her voice, she queried Jade. I don't suppose there is any way for me to contact them back, is there? I've been trying to contact them back since the message first came in, said Jade. I've had no success, and now the frequency is dead. Even if I could make it through, we are now trapped in the very place those Legion Marines were fleeing. Sashala, I am so sorry. It's not your fault, Jade. It's mine. This was my call, and now I must deal with it. These underground cities are all pretty much the same from what I understand. Use the maps we have from Detroit City and point me toward a cryolab or some other place to freeze. Winding down the helical ramp, the dim interior was broken only by the glowing red emergency lights. Dust and dirt hung in the air, and more portions of the walls were crumbling from the kinetic strike she'd witnessed earlier. Sashala heard the Beta City AI repeating an emergency alert. Attention to orders! Attention to orders! All Marines are hereby ordered to evacuate Beta City. A Class 1 quarantine has been placed due to the risk from excess radiation and structural damage. Report to your chain of command immediately for further orders. Attention to— The message droned on, forcing Sashala to order Jade to tune it out as she paused against one of the ramp's support pillars to catch her breath. The tickling feeling in her throat grew until she began coughing lightly. Once she'd caught her breath again, she jogged as fast as her battered body would let her. Jade highlighted routes in her helmet reticle as she moved. Occasionally, the lights flickered on, forcing Jade to constantly adjust the visor. Any other mission would have resulted in Sashala complaining about the migraine she would get from the chaotic visor enhancement conversions. Today, it was just about surviving. Jade flashed a dull red arrow pointing left, which indicated a sharp turn ahead. The moment Sashala cleared the blind corner, she stumbled into a disoriented Hardit. The jarring collision, paired with her growing fatigue, knocked her carbine from her hands. She felt the retention lanyard pull the SA-71 to her back and lock it in place. The clicking noise it created caused her hands to go instinctively to her knives. She smoothly pulled one of her blades out of the sheath on her injured right thigh and brought it upward in an arcing motion until it carved into the Hardit's stomach. The other hand plunged the knife deep into the monkey's ribs. Its hands and tail, which were clutching her throat in a vice grip and lifting her from the ground, increased the pressure in response. Sashala knew she couldn't stop while the fracker was cutting off her air. Both of her hands began brutally gashing into the heart at sides with her blades. She knew where the vital organs were, and she stabbed at their locations. Slowly, as a dark tunnel consumed her vision, the heart at relaxed and slumped forward. She fell with a Hardit and gulped for air. Her throat burned from the constriction, and this brought on a coughing fit. Her lips were warm and wet by the time she caught her breath again. After her vision cleared and she could breathe, Sashala used her assault thrusters to get out from beneath the furry dead weight. Sashala tried to rip the blade out of her vanquished foe. It was stuck. She realized the combat knife had lodged itself in one of the Hardit's ribs. Not wanting to waste time, she pulled her carbine from her back and kicked the bastard for stealing her stuff. Scanning the corridor beyond, Sashala could see many Hardit bodies scattered along the floor. They died from radiation, Sashala, said Jade. The gamma bomb seems to have been very effective against their species. Radiation is pretty effective against most species, said Zashalem. How are my current levels? Jade stated her levels were elevated beyond the safe parameter, but the use of medical nanites and prolonged rest might still save her life. While Jade continued blabbing about how everything could still work out, three Harditz rounded the corner of the long passageway and charged at Zashala. Zashala brought her SA-71 up to her eyes and fired three sabots, crumbling the incoming Harditz and stopping their charge. Walking forward with her carbine sights resting under her eyes, Zashala waited for more to come. When none did, she fired another sabot into each of the fallen Harditz and then reloaded.
That was too easy, said Zashala. The words made her go into another coughing spell.
This time the force of the hacking made it feel like the muscles in her stomach might break her own back. Jade responded.
You're complaining about easy kills. Your body is dying due to radiation, and you have sustained multiple injuries. Take the small victories and move.
Not wanting to argue with the logic of her AI, Zashala increased her pace as she moved down a longer passageway that forked in two directions. The red arrow Jade provided in her helmet reticle showed that she should go left. Then it flipped and said she should go right.
Jade, do you know where you're going?
Yes, this route would be more expeditious.
Shrugging, Zashala followed directions and wandered down the right, downward sloping passageway. Walking downhill was a nice change of pace. Zashala's metal boots slapped the deck as she bounded forward. The sight of a fallen armored marine at the turn in the passageway surprised Zashala. Shouldering her rifle and tactically moving forward, she let her assault thrusters push her along. As she closed the distance to the fallen marine, her thrusters puttered out.
That's it for your thrusters. Your suit's power unit is reaching critical mass, said Jade. Unless you want to do this alone, we need to get your suit charged.
All right, give me the nearest charging station, said Zashala. I don't have a fracking clue where I am right now, and I'm starting to feel really funny.
Following the arrows provided by Jade like an obedient marine, Zashala noticed her movements getting more and more clumsy. Pain also began creeping up all over her body. The bodies of dead marines around her felt normal for some reason, but the fact that many of them were already decomposed was strange. Holding her hand in front of her face, she laughed as trails of color followed her fingers. Jade's voice sounded far away. Then it was impossibly loud.
Target straight ahead. Can you hear me? Zashala?
Looking past her fingers, Zashala saw a red arrow pointing the direction she was supposed to go. Next to the hovering arrow were two hairy Harditz crouched over a four-armed suit of combat armor.
Hey, that's not for you,
said Zashala as she tried to grip her SA-71 with both hands. The two Harditz looked confused for a moment. Zashala opened fire and slowly walked toward them.
The magnetic coils of her carbine launched sabot after sabot at the monkeys, while she continued closing the distance and spraying the rifle back and forth.
Zashala continued walking forward and firing until she kicked the combat armor of the fallen Jotun. The Harditz were nowhere to be found. Zashala was confused and more than a little lightheaded.
Where'd they go? She said.
They ran away at least 30 sabots ago, Zashala. Sit down for a moment and look at the Jotun, please.
Zashala obeyed, happy for the chance to take the weight off her aching legs. Looking at the Jotun colonel the two Harditz had been messing with, she saw the crest of the 781st Tactical Regiment.
Zashala, I believe the surviving Harditz are attempting to collect command-level AIs. Perhaps procuring it might be useful down the road.
It took Zashala a few moments to get her fingers to obey her brain, but eventually she managed to get the AI chip off the colonel and tossed it into her leg compartment with her growing collection. Trying to stand, Zashala fell back to her butt in a flurry of pain and dizziness. Feeling like it might be better to lie down, she rolled onto her back. Her body throbbed. It was excruciating.
Zashala, your combat drugs are wearing off. You need to fight it. If you go to sleep now, you won't wake up. There are a few close hab disks. Let's try to get to one. They might be equipped with emergency nanites, charging stations, or even emergency cryo functions. It's not ideal, but you're not going to make it to a cryo lab.
Zashala groaned loudly as she pulled herself up to her feet. Cursing, she followed the arrows as they popped up in her helmet reticle. Each step was more difficult than the one before. Bruises, breaks, tears, holes, and sprains all throbbed in unison, reminding Zashala of the price she had paid up to this point and would continue to pay.
Sashala tripped forward onto a pile of broken beds, wood, rock, and other debris. It blocked most of the hallway ahead.
"Through this?" she mumbled.
"Yes, sorry. You're almost to the final location. Hold on." Already on her knees, she crawled through the pile, moving things out of her way as she burrowed through. This trip would have been impossible without massive power output by her armor, which was almost dead. Like her armor, she was fading fast, and she knew it. Jade continued talking nonstop while Sashala stumbled deeper and deeper into the hab disk. Sashala knew this was her AI's method of keeping her conscious. Regardless, Sashala was sick of hearing about how the emergency power units on the hab disks should allow her to start the emergency freeze protocols. Reaching level 6, Sashala felt a slight buzz of excitement. It was the first feeling, other than wanting to vomit or fall over and die, she'd experienced since the combat drugs had ebbed away in her system. Splashing forward, she realized she was standing in ankle-deep water.
Water? Are we going swimming?
It appears the kinetic strikes we observed are causing flooding throughout Beta City, said Jade. You should be okay once we seal and freeze your hab disk. I'll divert power and essential functions, even if the outside passageways are flooded. You've made it.
The air's leading Sashala about disappeared, and a door to her right lit up green in her helmet reticle. As she approached the door, Jade made it hiss open. She had made it.
Removing her helmet to prepare for the freeze, Sashala exhaled deeply as she limped inside the barracks. The door closed behind her, and for the first time since before the kinetic strikes, she thought she might make it through this ordeal. Her momentary respite was shattered as a hearted tail smashed her across the face. She spun like a top and slammed to the deck. From on the floor, she saw the hearted tail was covered in metal rings with spikes embedded in them. With blood pumping from the side of her face and splashing to the polished polycrete floor, she rolled as the tail came down again like a hammer. Still holding on to her SA-71 with her right hand, Sashala pointed the barrel upward and began pulling the trigger. The heart had howled as Sabos punched through its chest and head. When the heart had fell, Sashala gripped her carbine with both hands and emptied the magazine into the animal. When the Sabos ran out, Sashala put her SA-71 on the deck and began coughing. Blood exploded from her mouth as she hacked. Rolling onto her hands and knees, Sashala began to weep. Her entire body was a symphony of excruciating pain, with the open wound on her head leading a crescendo.
"I'm done, Jade," she said.
Falling into the puddle of her own blood, Sashala's body heaved up and down as she continued to retch up blood from deep inside her lungs.
"Sashala, please wake up. You only need to crawl a few more feet. Can you do that for me? Just a couple more feet? After all this, you don't just get to decide to lie down and die. No Marine left behind. That includes you, Sashala."
Slowly, Sashala pushed herself up to her hands and knees again. Blood pattered down to the polished deck while she dragged herself forward. Collapsing from exertion more than once, she continued her slow crawl.
"My face," she croaked, barely audible.
"Your facial wound isn't life-threatening," said Jade. "You lost a small portion of your upper earlobe. You'll have a scar, but that will just make you more attractive to the right Marine. Now go into the first barracks room to your right."
Sashala didn't respond. She couldn't. Her focus was on putting one hand and one knee forward and repeating the process with the other side of her body. She slithered forward like a slug, leaving a trail of blood behind her, until Sashala's head met the wall with a hollow thud.
"This part will be hard," said Jade. "You're going to have to stand, open the red and white box on the wall, and remove the auto-injectors."
Sashala pushed herself against the wall and inched her way up the side of it. The room spun precariously as her gloved hand fumbled with the latch on the case above her. Unable to manipulate the buckle, Sashala swung the weight of her arm into the medical box like a pendulum. The front of the box flopped open and a sealed plastic package of auto-injectors fell to the floor. Other miscellaneous tapes, creams, and implements hit the deck, too.
"Sashala, those are the needles," said Jade. "That set of three auto-injectors in the clear bag. Shoot them into your neck quickly. Those are emergency medical nanites. They are the best thing for you given your current injuries."
After fumbling with the packaging to remove the auto-injectors, Sashala injected all three into her neck like Jade instructed. With so many wounds, the pain from the injection didn't even register. Sashala felt a swell of warmth flow through her body.
"Can you just ice me right here?"
"Unfortunately, the emergency freeze protocol is inoperable in this hab disk. Fetch your helmet and carbine. We must leave this hab disk."
"Frecking hell, Jade, now where are we going?" said Sashala. Sitting up, she couldn't believe how much better she was feeling. The pain was still there and the tickle in the throat, but somehow the nanites were turning it all down a notch. Limping to where the Hardit had smashed her in the head, she picked up her helmet and carbine, cursing herself for slipping up the way she had. Jade spoke while Sashala secured her helmet, wincing as metal brushed her mangled ear.
"It is a very short trip to the next city phase unit, I assure you. The records I managed to find indicate that the CPU belongs to the 6907th TAC Regiment. If the fates are kind, the first hab disk inside will suit our purposes."
Sashala followed Jade's directions to the passageway, which connected the two city phase units. The path inclined up a full level and then across toward the next unit. She kept a moderate pace and could feel the emergency nanites continuing to do their work. While limping across the final portion of the connecting passageways, Sashala asked Jade to connect to the Beta City systems administrator. The response she received was shocking and unexpected, bringing her to an abrupt halt.
"There are two systems administrators for Beta City, each claiming different partitions. One system is locked down and we don't have the codes to get in, while the other is corrupted. The corruption to the server means that interfacing with it could kill me. Get me to an empty hab disk and I will quickly isolate it and make a new server."
Sashala started hacking again. Her hand went to her knee as she buckled over. Blood splashed from her mouth all over the inside of her helmet. Sashala's nose filled with a coppery scent of her own fluids.
"Jade, even if I get to an empty hab disk, how will me freezing myself stop this radiation from killing me? The emergency nanites are helping restore my movement and mask some pain, but I'm still coughing my lungs up."
"Once suspended in the iced state, your internal nanites will clean your cells of the radiation," Jade explained. "They won't have to focus on other functions as they do when you are awake. Just stay focused and we will live to fight another day."
Sashala wasn't a medic, but the explanation was good enough for her. With the taste and smell of blood heavy in her helmet, Sashala focused on getting to one of the empty hab desks. On the way down the ramp that led her out of the passageway, the base rumbled as some of its shock absorbers completely broke off their moorings. The unexpected tremors caused Sashala to trip, tumbling ass over end down the ramp until she hit a wall. Sashala gingerly stood up and promptly fell flat on her face. While lying on the ground, fighting the pain, she assessed her injuries. She had Jade run a full medical diagnostic scan from inside her armor and listened to the results. Her leg was broken. There were dangerous levels of radiation in her body, and she was still bleeding internally from several of her wounds. She might survive if she could safely ice herself.
"Another freckin' day in paradise," she said.
After struggling to sit up against the wall, Sashala waited for the pain levels to subside before attempting to resume her efforts. Sitting there, she started feeling sleepy and gave in to her body, screaming for rest. While halfway between reality and her dreams, she began hallucinating.
"Hey, lover, it isn't time to sleep yet,"
Matt Weech told her as she stared at him in wonder.
But you're dead,"
she said in disbelief.
"Yes, I retired, but it isn't your time. Get to the bunk, sweetie, and dream of the times we spent in the horizontal position,"
Matt urged her.
"Come on, do it for me, do it for us, do it for our son, wherever those fracking overlords took him. Do mind the water."
Sashala's eyes snapped open to see that water from the flooding was getting into her open wounds. Her armor patches weren't holding due to her abusing them, and the polluted water was interfering with the clotting agents. Ignoring this issue, she painfully shuffled to Hab Disk 612, the closest to her, and tried to gain entry. Sashala was shocked to learn that it was linked to the separately secured network Jade had told her about earlier. She queried Jade for assistance.
"You need to move on to the next Hab Disk,"
said Jade. "That systems administrator has access to higher functions than I do."
"Jade, seriously, seriously, how many more fracking places are you going to lead me to before you admit I'm completely and utterly fracked?"
"Just one more,"
Jade replied. Sashala coughed as she limped towards the next hab disks. Just as she got to the door, she caught movement in her peripheral vision. Not wanting to investigate and take a chance, she stepped through and slammed the door shut. When she was clear and the door had resealed in the hab disk, Sashala gripped her SA-71 and slowly cleared the room.
"I'm not getting bashed in the face again," she whispered.
Creeping through the barracks, Sashala was surprised by what she was seeing. She'd expected to see an orderly room like all the rooms she was used to. This space was in disarray.
The barracks appeared to be abandoned by Marines who'd quickly suited up and filed out to complete whatever assignment they'd been given. Duty uniforms were strewn across the floor, and abandoned tablets lay on bunks. It was as if the owners expected to return home at any moment. She let that give her hope, because she would spend eternity on ice if nobody came back. After clearing the room twice, she set her helmet on a top bunk and began dragging everything she could move. She had to block the door, lest the locking mechanism fail her. She pulled the nearest wall and footlockers over to make access more difficult. When it was done, Jade walked her through what she had to do next. You must be on a bed above the waterline, or your corpse will revive badly damaged. You will also need to run a charging cord and hook a power harness to your armor while you are iced. Remember to strip the AIs you retrieved and stow them in the compartment underneath the rack. Secure my AI chip as well, since I have made a copy of myself and stored it in the memory of your armor. I will activate the cryo-freeze protocol once you are ready. So Shala was ready for the flash freeze in under a minute. While she was climbing onto the rack, she heard Harditz pounding on the door as they attempted to gain entry. Sashala moved even quicker. She lay prone on the bed in her armor, with her helmet beside her. Jade addressed Sashala over the intercom. Emergency cryo-freeze protocol will be initiated in 2 minutes. Emergency cryo-freeze protocol will be initiated in 2 minutes. Knowing that her AI would continue that countdown for the entire 2 minutes, Sashala verbally used her override code and told Jade to start the freeze immediately. Sashala never finished explaining why she didn't want to wait. Her world faded, and her body lay waiting, a weapon in search of a cause.
This is the end of No Marine Left Behind, but the story continues with Fortress Beta City, Book 2 of the Sleeping Legion. Keep listening for a free preview. Prologue. 2600 AD. Early afternoon. Beta City, Scrofa Island, Serendine. 6th Battalion, 2nd Regiment, Nalapo Expeditionary Forces, Human Legion. Rain pounded the ground as the Stork Shuttle touched down on the barren remnants of Scrofa Island. Years earlier, the Human Legion had launched a gamma bomb that killed off all the trees and vegetation. Stepping from the winged troop transport, Colonel Tyrone Nesh Nalapo was the first Marine to place an armored boot on the volcanic island. This afforded her the dubious distinction of being the first Marine to do so, since Tranquility IV had been abandoned after the failures of the First Tranquility Campaign in 2568 AD. As the Marines of the 6th Battalion, 2nd Regiment, clambered out of the shuttle after her, Nalapo used the enhanced sensors and zoom capabilities of her combat helmet to scan the area. When she squatted down, the rest of the battalion took a knee in the mud and formed a temporary defensive perimeter. According to her sensors, they were still 10 miles from their intended destination. Despite the distance to the sally ports, if there were any Harditz above ground, they'd surely have heard the noise from the shuttles. With the perimeter set, Nalapo ordered a drone operator to send out a reconnaissance bird to ensure they weren't walking into a trap. The drone reports came in a few moments later, indicating only a few Harditz were seen on site. The 6th Battalion Marines moved out in an efficient manner, causing the training sergeant that lurked in Nalapo's heart to swell with pride. They reached the Beta City sally ports with no resistance. Confident that any Harditz would run at their arrival in force, they prepared to waltz into the Polycrete sally port. Unexpectedly, the Harditz inside the sally port opened fire. The Marines fell into a combat roll that made them harder targets for the aliens to hit. The evading Marines transitioned into firing stances, efficiently smashing sabots into exposed Harditz. Not wanting to lose their momentum, Nalapo activated her assault cutters. The end of her SA-71 rifle extended as neon blue needles sprouted out around the barrel. The monofilament needles began to rotate like a drill, until they were a blur of noise and death. Holding her rifle like a spear, ready to drive it through the nearest enemy, she charged toward the sally port ahead of her Marines. Good thing the Harditz Vex are too dumb to fortify the entrance properly, she thought as she ran down the sloping entrance of the sally port. Sprinting ahead of her Marines, Nalapo screamed for them to follow. She didn't look back to check because Nalapo knew her Marines would follow her into the jaws of death. She instead focused on preparing to impale whatever threat may be ahead. Lapu continued down the polycrete ramp of the Sallyport and turned the blind corner of the entrance to find a Hardit waiting in ambush. The hairy canine snapped its jaws as it closed the distance, running on all fours. This would be her first victim. Gripping her SA-71, Lapu activated her combat thrusters and launched toward the enemy. Screaming, she plunged the assault cutters through the Hardit's hair-covered head. The enemy's clawed hands fell limp as its head exploded in a mist of red. The Lapu and her Marines cleared the area in a few minutes by applying the same precise brutality she had demonstrated on the first Hardit. Delving into the upper levels, they began the tedious process of slaughtering Hardits as they found them. Normally, they would try to ensure every single Hardit died, but Nalapo was in a hurry. She couldn't leave her second-in-command, Major Spartica, unsupervised for longer than necessary. "Damn bitch will stab me in the back and gut me if given half the chance." Nalapo fumed as she took a moment to stop clearing rooms and wipe the gore from her helmet visor. Spurred on by thoughts of Spartica, her mind wandered back to the failed First Tranquility campaign, where Spartica had fought beside the Human Legion Marines. Spartica led the human resistance to the New Order and kept the survivors alive. While trying to include them into his plans to expand the Legion, Aaron McEwen had let the resistance join in the defense of Detroit City, while he'd led an expedition to raid Beta City for critically needed war materials. The Hardits had attacked while they were away, killing almost everyone. Among the fallen was Serge, Nalapo's son. Spartica and her two lapdogs lived, because they'd abandoned Serge along with the others. Nalapo would never forgive Spartica. She knew a personal war was brewing with Spartica, but for now, Nalapo was professional enough to know they needed each other. While Nalapo stood there lost in thought, her AI sent a burst of cool air into her face. "Colonel, your Marines are waiting for you. You can dream of the past and plot your revenge later." She knew her AI was right, and that time wasn't on her side. She refocused her frustration on the Hardits. The one by her feet had a large hole in its chest thanks to her assault cutter. Once the Hardits had been cleared from the upper levels, Nalapo dispatched her Marines and squads to explore each level for any useful supplies. Priority was placed on food and weapons with the intention of taking it with them when they left the system. Searching the city took a day. The Marines made camp for the night in the upper level, and the deceased bodies of the previous Hardit tenants were tossed into piles. The Marines had managed to find enough supplies to sustain a small battalion for a few months, though most of it would have to be sanitized. Most of the supplies had spent too long submerged in the tainted waters of the city, and were tinged with remnants of the dual plagues set off by the Freecorps mutineers. Nalapo watched a Marine attempt to wipe greenish-black sludge from a crater as she pulled off her helmet. Sitting down, she realized how tired her legs and arms were. "Glad we brought enough supplies for the 150,000 Marines we brought with us," she thought as she sent a brief prayer to the powers that be. Laying back and rolling over on the makeshift cot that served as her bed, she closed her eyes. The next morning, Lapu ordered the same teams back into the city to look for the cache of icers that she and General Aaron McEwen had speculated were under Beta City. After 2 days of searching, the Marines found nothing. They were unable to effectively scan the underwater areas due to the post-gamma radiation. Nalapo also suspected the Renegade Legion played a part in making any potential icers undetectable. There just wasn't enough time to keep searching. Strangely, even with the interference, they found 3 unidentified signals. When her best commo specialist couldn't drill down the signal, Nalapo decided they'd done everything they could. She ordered her Marines to fall back to the waiting Stork, and prayed Spartica hadn't caused too many issues while she was gone. Chapter 1 2601 AD Mid-morning. Post-revival Day 1. Abdisk 612, Beta City, Serendine. 1st Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. Lance began to awaken in his quarters with a foggy head. A cool white mist clouded his vision as his eyes fluttered open. After taking a moment to collect himself, he sat up in his rack. The damp and partially frozen bedding underneath him crunched as he lifted his arms and stretched. Warmth crept through his fingers and arms. In a jolt, his memories came rushing back. He was in the main hab disk of the network he'd constructed, and his unit was being revived from an emergency cryo-freeze ahead of the rest.
Swinging his frozen legs out of his rack, Lance slowly stood to stretch his armored limbs. Having wisely taken the precaution of going into his private quarters and instructing the Habdisk AI to revive him first, he began the metamorphosis from a human icicle back into the sergeant he was trained to be. Glad Xena left a copy of herself in the system, Lance thought, as he tried to do some squats. It would have been a huge loss if she didn't survive whatever happened while we were iced. Once he could move his fingers again, Lance attempted to open the white and red medical box on the wall. A coating of ice halted his progress. Frustrated, Lance bashed the box with an armored fist. Ice fell to the floor as the medical box burst open. He removed an auto-injector of emergency nanites and jabbed it into his neck. The auto-injector hissed and nanites flooded his bloodstream. Smiling at the spreading warmth, Lance squatted down in front of his rack to remove Xena from the protection of the Faraday cage. It was surprising an AI of her sophistication could be contained within a tiny black microchip. Lance began removing his ice-encrusted ace combat suit. The battle-worn armor was still freezing to the touch as he detached each piece and placed it onto a charging rack. Lance decided to use this time to hook his armor up for a full diagnostic check and battery recharge. While he looked for his uniform, he noticed that his sword was still there, along with his sidearm and rifle. Lance figured the chance of enemy contact was low, given the Habdisk had been frozen solid. Despite this, it never hurt to be careful. Fumbling with the straps, Lance hooked his Flintzer pistol to his waist and casually slung his sword over his back next to his SA-71 carbine. Satisfied with his uniform and equipment, he took a few more minutes to stretch and get his blood pumping. Lance's head began to clear as the emergency nanites pumped through his body. Regaining full control of his limbs, Lance verbally queried Xena for an update on the situation. The speakers in his room crackled to life and began recounting the time while he was iced. His blue eyes widened as he realized they had been frozen for 35 years. Their base had survived a mutiny and had been raided by both sides in a war between human and hearted adversaries. The only reason he was revived was due to emergency protocols being triggered during the war. Lance couldn't help but wonder why their automated distress signal had been ignored. A simple reply to that emergency aid request would have woken them much earlier. At least the report means humans are still fighting for the planet, Lance thought. I wonder what the status quo is and who we will report to. Sighing, he knew those details would have to wait. He needed to check on the cadets. The instant Lance walked into the main Habdisk chamber, he noticed some of his cadets weren't moving. He walked over to Cadet Lance Corporal Winifred Pinza's rack and checked for a pulse. There wasn't one. Her blue face had patches of frost on it. After a biometric scan, he realized that she had no brain function. Damn, resuscitation attrition. We lost our medic, frack. Tapping the AMI on his wrist, Lance queried Xena about the rate of cryogenic resuscitation attrition among Whiskey Company. Xena replied in her usual blunt manner. Lance, she's one of what will likely be many more casualties to resuscitation attrition. I will run a count and find out how many have succumbed. I've taken the liberty of canceling the revival orders for the creches, the novice barracks, and the Habdisks in the cryogenic storage levels. We don't know who might have been unintentionally iced in there, so let's save the surprises until we can get an armed marine task force down there. Lance grabbed a blanket from Pinza's rack. Looking at her for a moment longer, he then covered her. He turned and continued walking through the barracks. He needed to check on the rest of First Squad. Xena continued briefing him as he walked. As for the kids in the novice and creche barracks, there is no reason to revive them until we have secured Beta City or Higher Command reasserts its authority. I'm attempting to find out what is going on outside our Habdisk before we attempt contact. As the system administrator AI, I've also blocked all outgoing signals. I will be required to follow all lawful orders once we establish the new chain of command. Despite the grief he was feeling at the loss of cadets, Lance smiled at Xena's efficiency. While a pain in the arse, she was an invaluable ally and time-saver. Once the chain is established, I will set up and designate one of our extra AIs as the new system administrator, said Xena. Given the unknown, let's continue with the AI retrieval protocol. We can verify them individually and immediately get them ready for redeploy. I recommend you tend to your cadet so I can do your work for you, you useless Vec. Drent, but I miss Cassandra and times like these.
Xena broke contact so abruptly Lance paused his walk for a second to see if she would say more. She didn't. Moving deeper into the command section, Lance found Cadet Woodbury was also dead. A biometric scan by Xena indicated Woodbury had briefly awoken, only to die from shock. Lance paused to reflect on the second loss to resuscitation attrition. Losing cadets was hard, but when they were from the group he worked the closest with, it hit Lance especially hard. Knowing there might be more, Lance steeled himself and went into each of the rooms assigned to his squad. Out of them, he found they'd also lost the cadet he'd demoted all those years ago, Cadet Fitzgerald Wyckoff. I guess it could have been worse, Lance thought. First squad only lost 3 cadets, but to lose our medic and someone with as much potential as Wyckoff had shown is rough. He'd only just decided to take being a Marine seriously. Once Lance had accounted for his cadets, including the dead, he made the rounds among his squad again. He made a point of having them get out of their armor so it could be looked at by Basil Terlor. Batteries would also need recharging and seals potentially repaired. This freeze wasn't an ordinary one. While cryopods were relatively safe, an emergency freeze could cause unintended emotional and functional issues. Realizing the importance of morale, Lance made a point to make a personal connection with each of his cadets. When Lance got to Foxtrot Fireteam, where Charlotte Wyers-Rochambeau had lost Wyckoff, he paid extra special attention. Wyers was too important to lose to a mental lapse, and he'd already seen too many Marines become psychologically unhinged. Satisfied the health and well-being of his squad was as good as it would get, Lance called a staff meeting for Whiskey Company. He tasked Crystal Thorne, the first section leader, with organizing the rest of the squad into work details. They needed to prepare the barracks and their personal equipment for whatever was coming. Knowing they wouldn't think of it, Lance also told her to have the unit do some light calisthenics to shake the ice out of their veins. Chapter 2 Late morning, post-revival day 1. Whiskey Company Ready Room, Beta City, Serendine. Yankee and Whiskey Companies, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. Lance Cadet Sergeant Haley Mason and Marine Technician Corporal Basil Terlor were the first to arrive at the Whiskey Company Ready Room. Seeing it was empty, Lance turned to the Assistant Squad Leader and Marine Technician. They still looked half-frozen, so he began leading them in calisthenics to kill time and jolt them back to life. Xena pinged Lance as Amy while the group jogged around the tables in the center of the room. "Lance, you've got to stop letting your humanity be your crutch. You forgot to invite our neighbors. I took the liberty of inviting the staff from Yankee Company to this little shindig. They should be along shortly. Their NCO ranks were hit hard by resuscitation attrition, so I suggest you assert your command. They don't have the benefit of Hummer backing or me as their AI." After her pronouncement, one that sounded suspiciously like a call for Lance to lead a military coup, Xena went silent. Somehow Lance didn't think the serenity following her advice was inadvertent. Ignoring the antics of his AI, he continued his slow jog around the room. Haley and Basil had yet to say a word, as their bodies were still recovering from the long freeze. They had just finished jogging and started stretching when personnel started entering the room. Each sergeant nodded toward Lance as they began to take their places around the company table. The large circular table had a built-in podium at the front of it, and Lance eyed it nervously. When the seasoned Yankee Company sergeant, Senior Veteran Sergeant Calius Thorne, walked in, Lance pulled him aside for a quick chat. "Sergeant Thorne, I know this is irregular and that you're the senior-ranking NCO left in the HAB disk, but right now I've got an upgraded AI which is controlling the network we created before the mutiny. Protocol dictates that I immediately turn command over to the first competent senior authority." Thorne nodded as if preparing to take charge, but stopped and flexed his jaw when Lance continued talking. "I fully plan to do that, but for the sake of our Marines, we must first find out exactly where we stand, so we hand it over to the right person. If no officer survive, I will turn over command to the senior surviving non-commissioned officer. I hope you understand, and by no means am I disrespecting the value of your many years of service." Thorne revealed no emotion and stared at Lance. The ever-serious Thorne replied that he understood and would be watching like a predator waiting to pounce. Lance gulped, knowing Thorne would kill him if he thought he was being disloyal. With this threat looming, Lance nodded his understanding and followed the Yankee Company sergeant to the briefing table.
Taking a moment to clear his mind, Lance began addressing the assembled sergeants from Whiskey and Yankee Company. Lance noticed the group looking from him to Thorne and back again. "Since we all know each other, we can save the introductions and I'll jump right into the thick of things. Right before we were frozen, the drugs given to increase combat effectiveness were tampered with by the mutineers. This turned our brother and sister Marines into mindless drones. To combat the effects of these drugs, and because Captain Gorgona became a believer in the new training, she provided Whiskey Company Marines with nanites. This allowed us to resist the drugs. As you know, we were just about to start the void training phase where mistakes can... Can you still make these nanites? Interrupted Thorne. It's imperative all remaining Marines take them since we don't know what's waiting outside our hab disk. Before he answered, Lance used his AIMI to ask Xena if they could get every Marine protected with the nanites. Xena assured him it could be done and that the nanite facilities were operational if they could manage to get through the flooded corridors to access the cryogenic storage areas on levels 10 and 11. Sergeant Thorne, it can be done, but will require some creativity on our part to pass through the flooded corridors. We need to figure out the flooding situation soon since food storage is currently flooded. Once we have figured out our unit organization and a chain of command, we can figure out our work priority list. I trust you will bring this up with whoever our new commander is. Thorne took a moment to digest the information before he grunted his acceptance. Knowing time was of the essence, because the flooding was threatening to cause the base to fail at any moment, Lance pushed the briefing forward. Once every Marine has nanites, they'll be on their own to figure out how best to use them. Their AIs will assist. Back to how we were all frozen. During the mutiny, Whiskey Company wasn't affected. We had one of our electronic specialists take what assets we could and lock them out of the base network, adding them to the new one we created. That is why we're all alive today. To be blunt, General Toma's orders didn't apply to us because we're not a unit of the line, but there were units we saved who should have been deployed into his meat grinder. The collective body of NCOs looked nervously at one another. Their actions had conflicted with higher orders. Seeing this, Lance raised his hands and said, "No need to fret like creshlings. It was my decision, and it's my head on the block. However, you all need to know the lay of the land. A lot has happened while we were iced." Realizing that they needed a moment to process, Lance paused as if to gather his thoughts. Putting both his hands on the podium in front of him, he waited until the assembled group returned their eyes to him. "During this mutiny, Harditz and Marine mutineers aligned together to overthrow our White Knight overlords. They killed off every loyal Marine they could find. Then they released a poison, which killed all of the Jotuns and Trogs left on the planet before they ran to points unknown." Thorne broke in. "If the water is contaminated, then we are going to have to figure out a way to keep ourselves hydrated. Solutions? My AI assures me that once the flooded water is drained, Beta City will be safe from any traces of the plague. The filtration systems will handle the rest. If there are any surviving Trogs or Jotuns, as long as they don't drink the dirty water, they'll no longer be affected by the plague." "What of the hearted cowards?" Thorne inquired. The grizzled old sergeant seemed to be looking for nails to hammer. "They could still be in the system, though I doubt they'd wait around for the White Knights to come looking for them," Lance explained. Thorne and some of the other NCOs seemed disappointed they wouldn't get the chance to go hearted hunting anytime soon. Lance knew they needed to channel their energy in a useful way, here and now. "That's what happened before we disconnected and initiated the emergency freeze. Our intentions were to await the return of competent authorities who would assume command of Beta City. It looks like we'll have to improvise a bit," said Lance. "If there are no questions, I suggest we all stretch our legs for a moment. Those of us not in combat armor should hit the head. Hey, we all know what cryo-freezing does to the insides. No shame in that." After a few moments of silence, Lance left them to their tasking. He was pleased to see they were in good spirits and seemed to be paying close attention to what he was saying. He was also grateful Thorne didn't attempt to squash his authority in front of everyone. Because they were still feeling the freeze, Lance hadn't had a chance to touch bases with Basil and Haley, who were sitting by themselves talking to each other. They both gave him a sideways glance when he walked over. "So, Haley, having fun sitting at the big girl's table now?" asked Lance. Haley arched her eyebrow and glared at Lance. "I'm having so much fun that I want to shove my boot up your frozen ass, but your combat armor recently stuck tubes there. After 35 years of tubes, I'd say your old man glutes deserve a break," said Haley.
Realizing she just mouthed off to her sergeant, her face got pale. Lance laughed at the expression on her face. "Cadet, relax. As my number two, you need to feel free to talk to me. There are limits, but we'll figure those out later. I'm glad you're thought enough to be a smart arse. Think about what you hear in this briefing. If you have any ideas or solutions, feel free to voice them. And yes, in the discussion sections of these meetings, you can speak too. Think on it. We can talk later." With that, he smacked Haley in the shoulder before turning toward Basil. "Are you doing okay?" said Lance. "Your first cryo-freeze can be hard, and this one was a kick in the nuts. Regardless, I'm going to need you in tip-top shape." Looking more confident than Lance had ever seen him, Basil replied, "Doing great, Sergeant. I'm concerned that we won't have everything we need to get our equipment operational. To be honest, I'm not sure what to do with this new rank General Toma gave me." Basil stopped talking and lifted his fingers up to the rank insignia on the sleeve of the smart fabric uniform he was wearing. He looked like his brain had run off somewhere before his eyes snapped back up to Lance. "I didn't even get to process being a Marine. I never thought it would happen after getting booted as a week one cadet. I'll try to live up to the position and organize our technicians, as well as any AUGs we find who might add value to our fighting Marines. It's the least I can do to honor General Toma's last decree." Lance clapped Basil on the shoulder. He was surprised at Basil's newfound maturity. "He's starting to sound like a Marine," mused Lance, "maybe for the first time." "Sounds like a solid plan, Tech Corporal. We can fine-tune things once we've figured out the new chain of command." Lance headed back to the front of the conference table, gripped the podium, and cleared his throat to get everyone's attention. "If you'll retake your places, we'll resume the briefing." While everyone filtered back into the room, Lance scanned his AIMI and communicated with Xena to figure out what assets were available to him and to iron out the plan to save the Marines currently trapped in Beta City. Thorne cleared his throat. Lance looked up from his AIMI to see everyone waiting on him to continue. "Now that you know what preceded the emergency cryo-freeze, I'll update you on what's going on above ground. During our 35-year ice time, Beta City was raided by a group of human Marines calling themselves the Human Legion, and they stripped us of some of our supplies." "Human Legion? Who are those frackers?" Thorne asked. As always, the hammer was looking for nails. It also seemed to Lance that Thorne had his fingers on the pulse of the NCOs. If Lance wanted the NCOs on his side, he needed to have Thorne in his corner. "This group is likely a splinter group of the Free Corps mutineers that initially rebelled and killed our brothers and sisters," said Lance. "However, we don't want to assume anything. Too much is unknown at this point regarding that group, which is why we need to have our cargo locked down before we contact them." "So they might not be enemies," Thorne responded. "They appear to be at war with the Hardits on Tranquility, who have reorganized themselves into the New Order. Whatever the disposition of the Human Legion proves to be, it is very clear that the Hardits are our enemies. During this war, several TAC nukes were fired off, which initiated the emergency revival protocol for the Beta City HAB disks. We've managed to leave all of their creches and novice barracks frozen. They can be revived when the planet is securely in our hands." Suddenly feeling the weight of responsibility bearing down on him, Lance paused to take a drink of water before continuing. Putting the silver canister back down on the podium, he secretly wished it was grog and not water. "As it stands, we need to assess what assets we have at our disposal. After that, we contact the other secured HAB disks so we can rebuild a chain of command. My AI indicates the passageways between the HAB disks are all flooded except for the top three. Our passive sensors say those clear levels belong to ill-disciplined Hardit troops. The monkeys are likely some sort of reserve or militia force." Thorne's gray eyes lit up. "So we will get to kill some Hardits. That's the first good news you've given us." The group busted into laughter, and Lance joined them in the revelry. When it died down, he continued. "The bad news is the base likely can't be returned to any sort of active status even after we take out the Hardit trash. Good news, it can be made functional enough for us to strip it and rebuild a better Beta City. Our technicians and our engineers, if any survived, can rebuild the machines that bore the city phase units, and we will have a solo tower subterranean city at our disposal. If we're lucky, some unfortunate officer survived the freeze and can worry about that." A nervous laugh permeated the room. The chuckle sounded awkward and juvenile, and it took Lance a second to realize that it was his own. He took a calming breath and continued his brief with more confidence.
While we take stock of our assets, I'll be contacting the other surviving disks and determine what resources they have. Then we can turn this mess over to the first legitimate authority we can find. We'll be fending for ourselves with no clear orders, so unity from the NCO Corps must be absolute and ironclad. When I hear from the other disks, I'll notify you all. Our next briefing will have digital representation from the other HAB disks. Hopefully some of the senior leadership survived. This mess can be their problem, and we'll just do whatever they tell us. That's if the door seals don't bust and flood us out. The last comment caused everyone to start laughing nervously. After the chuckling died down, the Marines covered some minor housekeeping issues. True to NCO nature, they stressed the importance of hydration, physical training, and equipment preparation. Finished, everyone stood up and began filing out to find their individual commands. As Yankee Company exited, Lance motioned to Thorne. When it was just the two of them, Lance began. "We don't have much time, but I will contact you once the other squad leaders and Whiskey determine which sergeant has seniority to temporarily fill Sergeant Kata's position. At which point, the two of you can create a plan as to how to handle the other HAB disks in." Thorne startled Lance by breaking into laughter. "You don't get it, do you, Scipio?" After Lance shook his head in the negative, Thorne continued. "Whiskey Company idolizes you after what happened at the Battle of Old Oconee City. They already look at you as their temporary leader, but I'll await the call nonetheless. Delegating leadership lets me focus on more important things. Just don't get yourself killed." Thorne chuckled as he walked out of the room.
If you enjoyed this audiobook, you'll love The Demons of Cor Lyr, a free standalone novella in the Sleeping Legion series, available exclusively on oddfans.com. That's audfans.com. Sign up today for free and start listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.